swagger, okay? Regardless of what happens out there, doesn't matter. Keep your swagger.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Five Hole Fantasy Hockey Podcast. I'm your host today, TJ Branson. We've got a special interview for you today. Scott Cullen joining the show. We're talking sleepers. It's about as juicy as it's going to get in the preseason. So I'm really not going to waste too much more time. If you're in a fantasy hockey sphere, you know who Scott Cullen is. You know where to find him. By Scott Cullen on Twitter. You know how his projections do and where his sleepers stack up. So that's what we're going to be talking about. Let's get straight to it. Scott, it's great to have you on the show. Again, I mean, we've done this a couple times before, and it seems like it's an annual thing for us, and I enjoy having you on, and I'm happy that you carved some time out. Let the people know where they can find you, what you're doing, what they can click on, what they can listen to. I know you're doing Locked On Fantasy Baseball and Locked On Fantasy Hockey. Floor's yours.
Yeah, you can listen on Locked On Fantasy Hockey, Locked On Fantasy Baseball. Written, if you're looking for that, you can find, I'll have stuff on McKean's Hockey and at The Athletic. And stuff that doesn't land on McKean's or The Athletic will be on my own Substack. I'll put stuff on scottcullenhockey.substack.com. And who knows, I may still add another spot or two to kind of fill out the rotation, but that's where we are right now.
How do you do it? You seem like one of the busiest guys in the business.
I juggle a lot. When all those years when I was at TSN and I could just sort of focus on one thing, like at one place, it made life a lot easier, I'll tell you. When you're kind of freelancing and going around from different thing to different thing, there are some advantages to that. But at the same time, like, there are people who are more organized than myself who it probably works better for. And, you know, in my case, I end up feeling like I'm juggling from one spot to the next. And, you know, hopefully I don't drop any of the balls.
That's wildly relatable at times, man. So let's get into some fantasy hockey talk. The main premise we're going to be talking about is some sleepers. We want to start getting into that. It's creeping up on preseason and draft season, most importantly. But just a couple of questions off the top. The Olympics this year, a lot of players are going. How do you see that affecting the schedule? And just from like a full picture, how do you see that affecting us as fantasy GMs?
Well, I mean, I suppose there's more risk, you know, at some... You know, you run this tournament in the middle of the season, there's a chance that one of your star players is going to get hurt. I can't imagine that you're going to, selecting your team, that you're going to avoid players who are going to the Olympics.
Right, yeah.
Because naturally they're the best players. And so I don't imagine that there's going to be some, you know, dramatic effect like, oh, this guy played in the Olympics and then he didn't score for a month when he came back. Like, I don't think we're going to have those kinds of situations. So I basically look at it as if somebody goes to the Olympics and they get hurt, well, that's the bad luck that can hit you anytime during fantasy hockey season. And just so happened that you got it during the Olympics. So I'm not going to alter my rankings or anything based on expectations of whether a guy's going to the Olympics or going to have a break at that time. I don't, you know, in previous year, I mean, it's been a while, I guess, since they last went to the Olympics, but in previous years, I don't recall there being enough of a shift in the results from the guys who went for it to really, you know, matter. I mean, Tavares, who got hurt at ages ago when they played, and so he missed kind of the stretch run for the Islanders at the time. And yes, that would be really awful, and that's kind of, I think, the worst case scenario. But it could have happened to kind of anybody. It's just that's just random fluke. And you know, as much as I like to project things, I can't nail down who might get hurt in that 2-week tournament.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of a. It's inherent risk that's just baked into every player. Every player is one bad hit away from missing the rest of the season. So it's
yes.
You know, you're taking, and you bring up a really good point. Like, they are the best players. You cannot avoid taking them just because they're gonna play extra games. So the fantasy community is very much looking forward to your projections. Do you have like an ETA, any scoops, inside scoops on when we can expect them?
Yeah, I think that my plan is that I'm gonna put out top scorers, however many that is, 300 to 400 on Wednesday. I'll do goalies on Thursday and then hopefully have the full, you know, position by position, all the categories and stuff by Friday. You know, this is the juggling we were talking about before. You're right, is when you're you know, trying to pump out a couple of podcasts every day for the Locked On people, write season preview stuff for McKean's, and then start getting preview stuff ready for The Athletic to also do these rankings and you know, all those other things, you know, happen to contribute to my bottom line more so than the rankings do. So the rankings keep getting kind of pushed back. And so hopefully, you know, training camps are just starting. So I'm not too far late, at least. I saw people when they started, you know, posting their rankings, you know, Dom from The Athletic and others, and I'm like, oh, guys, I mean, I'm not even there. And so, yes, my expectation is this week they will be off my plate and out for the world to see and enjoy or complain about.
Rankings lists are always so hard because there is that fine line where you're either pissing somebody off or there's confirmation bias. So I can tell you that there is an insane appetite for it, and we all appreciate what you're doing, and you're putting a lot of work into it. And us fantasy GMs, if I can speak for everybody, we definitely appreciate it.
Well, I mean, look, I've been doing it for a long time and I enjoy it, right? It's just when it comes to the timing of it and things like that, sometimes it's like, oh, when am I going to, you know, put this all together? And so, as I say, I hope it'll be this week. And you know, when you talk about their ranking, right, if you end up ranking 400 or 500 players sometimes, and invariably some of the rankings aren't going to be any good, right? Like, you know, who knew that this guy was going to be awful, or who knew that this guy was going to break through? All that stuff happens. I can live with it in small doses, right? As long as, you know, most of the analysis is okay. But every once in a while, you know, because you've kind of compiled all these things and you put them together and kind of read through it. Okay, it looks all right. Edit it again and again. All right, put it up. And then, you know, so what about this guy? I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Like either they aren't on the list, or they're way down here for whatever reason. Like when you're trying to you know, go through them in your head and it's your own list, it's easy for stuff to kind of slide by because in your brain it's going one way, but what's actually on the page sometimes isn't the same. So anyway, I'm looking forward to that this week. That'll be a really real highlight of the week is when people can go, what about this guy? That guy.
That'll keep you plenty busy. How do you go about your projections? Is it all like gut takes? Do you use a Marcel model? Like, how do you kind of do that?
Well, my model is kind of a weighted model from past years. But then, I mean, basically, you know, as I always say about this, that there's art that goes with that science is that you then have to kind of come up with some evaluation of, okay, this guy should play more this year, you know, based on their role in the team, whatever. How do I affect the ranking based on that? Like, is he going to play 10% more? Is he going to play 5% more? Some of that requires, you know, guesswork, but hopefully it's educated guesswork. And if you're monitoring depth charts and rosters and have some idea about a guy's role on the team, you know, you're not going to be too far off in what your expectation is for a player. I mean, I think it's really rare that, you know, a player goes from complete obscurity to playing a huge role. Like, I mean, I think of a guy like Jason Robertson last year, right? Even when he started with the Stars, like they first put him in the lineup, he's playing 4 flying minutes, 10 minutes a game kind of. And then like 2 weeks in, it's 18 minutes a game and it never goes down. And you're like, oh, well, I mean, the Dallas Stars didn't know he was this guy. Why would people who are evaluating from the outside have any idea, right? And so that's the kind of case where, well, yes, I obviously would have undershot on Jason Robertson, but everyone else did too. So,
yeah.
So don't worry about it. Basically, is how it goes. But yeah, that's sort of the weighted model is sort of the foundation. But then there always has to be tweaking to when you hit a player who's kind of in where they've had kind of steady several years in the league. You know what their ice time is going to be. You have, you know, you can calculate off there, and then you don't have to do much with their. With their projection, it's like, well, his role next year should be about the same as it was the year before and the year before that. So we're just going to keep riding with that player. And, you know, maybe his percentages will fluctuate a little bit one way or another, but you know, you can adjust for those as well. You know, those are the guys who make it easy to do projections. It's like when you have somebody who's had, you know, less than a season or a season and a half or something, and you're trying to, you know, evaluate, A, how much ice time they're going to get, And then B, what are you supposed to read out of that kind of small sample of games that they actually have in the NHL? I mean, to say nothing of guys who you're just trying to do NHL equivalencies if they're coming from, you know, from Europe or junior hockey or the AHL. I mean, any of those guys, you know, you can use information to make the rankings better, but you know, there's a whole lot of risk involved when you start dealing with those guys. But it's, you know, having said all that, those are the guys who are the most fun to project, because you know you can have an idea of, you know, who you think is going to make this, you know, big splash in the National Hockey League. Doesn't always happen.
And then there's guys that like change teams, like Zach Hyman. There's a ton of hype there.
Sure.
You know, you plan for him to be with McDavid at even strength for sure. And then there's whispers of him on the top power play that, you know, that could bump his projections up 15 points. Yeah. Are there any players off the top of your head that you see breaking out this year that you plan to hitch your wagon to?
Well, I mean, breaking out, and I don't know how, I'm not digging super deep here, but I think Kirby Dach in Chicago is worth kind of getting in on this year, because last year was a lost cause, basically, right? When he broke his wrist at the World Juniors and, you know, didn't come back until the end of the season, only scored like one goal. If you kind of looked at the way his rookie season ended in terms of like his role, I just think there's an opportunity there for him to get back to that, where he can play significant minutes for them and kind of build on the way his rookie season ended. Like going into last season, I was, you know, fully prepared to be excited about Kirby Dach. As I said, busted up his wrist and it was like, oh, well, never mind. And so I'm kind of get back on that train, I guess, is that I think fully healthy and with the Blackhawks, you know, whether you like the Blackhawks chances this year or not, they're obviously playing to win. And so there's opportunity there for, you know, Dach to play with some pretty good players and we'll see what he does. I think Jack Hughes, you know, again, you're not digging super deep, say a guy who was the first overall pick, but like, you know, his rookie season was a real struggle. And then last year, even though the point totals weren't there, the underlying numbers were very encouraging. And so that, you know, it's not just a matter of, oh, great, he's got great underlying numbers, you know, great offensive impacts or something. And you can just assume that that's going to lead to points. But it's a lot more encouraging to take that, you know, somebody who's creating chances and, you know, driving zone entries and those kinds of things as sort of the precursor to them taking that next step, as opposed to just, you know, like if it was Hughes coming off his rookie season, there wasn't a whole lot to be excited about. And so I'm a little optimistic on him. And I guess for the same reason, I would consider Kaapo Kakko for the Rangers, right? Like his rookie season was a disaster. Last year, the point totals still weren't really, really there. But his underlying numbers and possession numbers and all that were pretty strong. And on top of all that, if you look at the depth chart for the Rangers, he's going to have a pretty good chance to, you know, play in a scoring role. In an ideal world, he might end up playing with Panarin. And if that's the case, well, then just hit your wagon and hope that Panarin can drag him into respectability.
You'd like to think that he's going to be in the top six and either of those two lines. I mean, best case scenario is Panarin, or maybe you could say best case scenario is Zibanejad. So there's not much... Yeah. There is no real worst case scenario unless he winds up on the third line.
Just as long as he ends up in the top six, right? That's the whole you know, guide there. Is that if you end up in the top six with the Rangers, you should have a chance to score.
Well, I hope so. I'm looking at some of these sleepers by ADP standards. I like to, my sleepers, maybe not. I always find it like sleepers kind of goes hand in hand. It's almost synonymous with just value by ADP. Yep. And Drake Batherson was... I think he's the latest. Yeah. So actually, I guess Charlie Coyle here, not ranked, but in terms of Yahoo ADP, Drake Batherson, ADP of 175. Ottawa is at a stage in which they're getting better every year. They finished the year above 500. I think they went 10-5-1 in their last, you know, handful of games, really playing spoiler. But Drake Batherson had a lot of unsustainability under the hood. At 175, there's little to no risk there, but I think the upside is good. How do you feel about Drake Batherson this year?
Yeah, there's some, you know, the percentages are a little high, and that's legitimate concern, I guess. But I think particularly for fantasy purposes, you know, Batherson, in addition to scoring, you know, he kind of pads your hit category as well. And I think he got 102 hits in 56 games. If you have a guy who could score you 25 goals and, you know, have 150-ish hits, you know, there's a lot of value there just if he kind of performs similar to last year. And that's to say nothing of, well, maybe he improves a little bit because, you know, now he's got a real, I mean, to say a full season, but it was a full 56 game season. So he doesn't really have a full season, you know, that he got used to. But I think, you know, last season, you know, there are a few teams who did this, but the Senators were in a position where they could let some of their young guys just play and kind of play through, you know, slumps and what have you, and still give them minutes. And Batherson was one of those guys who I think made the most of it. You know, like he had some hot streaks, but, you know, he went through some dry spells and
it seemed like there was no in between either.
Yeah.
He was either really hot or really cold.
And on a contending team, you know, he might not get another chance after the dry spell, right? Like they might just say, okay, well, we're going to, you know, bury you over here for the time being. But if you're Ottawa and you weren't in contention, well, it makes sense for you to try and bring him back and get him going again. And so, as you say, the ADP is 175 for Batherson. Yeah. At that point, I'm interested in him and I'm probably interested in him even a little sooner, but there is some risk there, and which is why you're not going to rush out to get him early. But once you get into middle rounds, I think there's upside there. And as I said before, the kind of the safety valve of he pads you your hit totals, which, you know, you don't always get out of a winger, like a scoring winger. You know, there are a bunch of scoring wingers who are liabilities when it comes to hits. So if Batherson can give you a little bit, that helps too.
So the next guy I was curious to get your take on is Andre Burakovsky. And the reason I have him here, even though he's an ADP of 113, so what's that? That's like round 11, round 10, if my math's not too far off, in 12 team leagues. Yeah. 68 point pace, 64 point pace the year before. Jonas Donskoy on his way to Seattle. Donskoy was the guy on the top power play. Do you think it's Kadri? Do you think it's Burakovsky who gets that top power play spot? Or even somebody like Alex Newhook? There's a, you know, a deafening crowd of people who believe it's going to be Alex Newhook, but yeah. let the kid play, let the kid get used to the water before you dump him in the deep end, right? So
yeah.
Who do you got for that fifth power play spot?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's Burakovsky. I mean, like Kadri, I mean, last year was kind of a long slump that, you know, you lose some of your
54 games.
You lose some of your fantasy appeal when you go through kind of this long, prolonged slump the way Kadri did, you know, and during his best years with Toronto, where he would get power play time and you could kind of say, okay, like, even though he wasn't you know, getting first line wingers and stuff, you could go, okay, but he's getting that first unit power play time, and you could kind of bank on that for Kadri. And if he's getting first unit power play time in Colorado, well, then you still like him. But I think they're inclined probably to give Burakovsky a shot there. And I don't necessarily think that it's the kind of thing where it's only going to be Burakovsky and Kadri will never see it. This is, you know, 82 games, God willing, they play all 82 games this year. There's lots of time for guys to move in and out, and it'll be injuries and other opportunities for guys to move up. And so, you know, if I have to prioritize it, well, then I would prioritize Burakovsky over Kadri. But it's an interest, really, a team like Colorado, it's interesting to kind of lurk around the edges there and find the guys who are going to get, you know, plugged into a really great spot. If it's Burakovsky who ends up, you know, playing on the first unit power play with McKinnon and Rantanen and et cetera, well, then, you know, it's a pretty great spot. I mean, even if you're the fifth member of the power play there in Colorado, the puck may not be running through Andre Burakovsky very often, but, you know, you're there for rebounds and tips and all that stuff. That, I mean, when that line is cooking, I mean, they're something else. So, yeah, that's probably my take on it. And as you know, as you were talking about Newhook before, yeah, like he's a totally interesting sleeper candidate because there's upside there that, you know, if all of a sudden they decide they're going to move him up the depth chart, great. But, you know, I don't think we can assume that that's the case, that he just will probably plays in the middle six to start. And, you know, you see where it goes from there.
Even if he is, you know, fifth fiddle there, secondary assists count the same as regular assists for us in fantasy. So I'll be okay with it. Another interesting kind of wild card I want to say is the 2C in Boston. Now, I feel like the leading candidate has got to be Charlie Coyle. There's Nick Foligno and there's Arakala. Charlie Coyle not ranked as in terms of ADP. So he fell outside of most drafts. couple questions. How do you feel about Charlie Coyle? And do you think he's the leading candidate for that 2C spot?
I liked Charlie Coyle a few years ago more than I like him now.
He was fun in Minnesota.
Yeah. Like during his best, and even during his best years, there was kind of some hit and miss times with Charlie Coyle. But at his best, he was a big, strong center who could drive play and you get secondary offense out of him. And really, if he could do that for the Bruins, I think they'd be totally happy with it. You know, that if they have Hall, you know, doing a lot of the carrying the puck through neutral ice there, but you have Coyle who can get in on the forecheck and help them cycle. And, you know, even if Coyle is the second line center in Boston, I don't necessarily expect that he puts up a ton of points, but he might put up enough points to have some fantasy relevance. Like, I also think that there is you run the risk that second line center spot is going to be a revolving door. You know, if Charlie Coyle's there for five games and doesn't produce anything, okay, well then we're going to give Foligno a shot at it. And then if Foligno doesn't, okay, well Jack Studnicka is going to get a shot at it. Like,
yeah.
I think the Bruins are totally open to, trying things out and kind of letting it go. Like, and the thing is, with Hall on the left side and Craig Smith on the right, you kind of have the foundation there for this line to be pretty good. No matter who is there, but they might be able to drag whoever is that second line center into, you know, some respectable production. Like, I mean, it was different with Krejci. I mean, Krejci's better than just a guy. And so all of a sudden when Hall showed up, that line just exploded. And they were great down the stretch last year. You know, whoever is going to come in there isn't going to be Krejci. You know, they're not going to have the playmaking chops and think the game in the same way. So, you know, if I have to say, oh, who do you like best? Well, it is probably Coyle. That would be my guess. And that's also probably how Boston's, you know, their first choice when doing it. I mean, just based on how much they're paying Charlie Coyle, they'd probably rather their issue at second line center rather than having to, you know, find other people to do it while they keep Coyle on the third line. I'd be kind of wary about whoever you take in that spot, because I don't necessarily think that it'll be locked down.
Yeah, I think the only safe bet there is that it's not just going to be copy paste David Krejci's stats to whomever takes that second line spot. Staying in Boston, Nick Foligno plays a very similar game to Nick Ritchie, who spent a lot of time on that top power play. Do you got him pegged for it? Or do you think, I mean, if it's me, I'm putting a trigger like Taylor Hall up there, but yeah. Bruce Cassidy has picked that net front bruiser time and time again to be on that top power play.
Yeah, I'm kind of like you, is that it would make more sense to me to play Taylor Hall there and just go, because you would then have just outrageous skill from your four forwards, and suppose Matt Grzelcyk is the one who ends up getting the, you know, Charlie McAvoy just doesn't seem to work on the first power play. So it ends up being Grzelcyk. But like Foligno probably will get some power play time. Like Ritchie wasn't always the first unit guy. And I can see the Bruins doing stuff like that where, you know, at times they'll put Foligno, let him be that net front guy. And then other times they'll realize that it's pretty good to be able to put Taylor Hall on your power play too. And you can just, you know, run him with the top line. And, you know, have that much skill on the ice at one time, you should be able to make some things happen. And so, I mean, I wouldn't, my expectation for Foligno isn't going to be, you know, bursting through the roof because I expect him to have a huge power play role. I'm sure he'll contribute at some point during the season on the power play, but I don't think it's a real value changer for him.
Somebody that's pretty exciting and fits extremely well into Daryl Sutter's system is Blake Coleman. He's a bruiser.
Yeah.
He fits right in to me with Daryl Sutter. I got him pegged for a top six role, probably not touching power play one with, you know, the players that they do have there. But
yeah,
Blake Coleman, this is an improvement to me from Tampa, but maybe not as high as at peak Coleman when he was like pretty solid in New Jersey and everybody got really excited.
Yeah.
What do you got for Blake Coleman this year?
Yeah. Like I think, you know, Coleman has the chance, I think, basically for better line mates in terms of offensive production in Calgary. Maybe not necessarily better line mates overall, really, because, you know, when that line was going with him, Gord, and Goodrow, they really, you know, they made a difference. But in Coleman's case, one huge hitter, so you get that fantasy value. He should be Daryl Sutter's kind of player, like as you say, he's and to that end, you would expect Sutter to want to play him a lot. You know, if he ends up playing with line mates who are a little bit more skilled, a little bit more inclined to score, well, then there's opportunity there. And it's not as though Coleman, you know, there's a big difference, I think, between Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow. You know, coming from Tampa Bay, like Goodrow is a real grinder who's, you know, if he ends up on some team's fourth line, I mean, he's getting paid way too much for that now. But yeah, if that's where Barkley Goodrow was, you go, okay, that's fine. That's a good fit or whatever. But in the case of Coleman, like, as you say, I think he easily fits on a second line on not just Calgary, but like many teams. It just so happened that on Tampa Bay, you know, they have an embarrassment of riches that they can play a guy like Blake Coleman on the third line. You know, because you know, this guy who scored 20 goals a couple of times, and you know, if you put him up with some half decent line mates in Calgary, more offensive production really than what he's had recently. Now, the fact that he's probably not going to be, you know, a first unit power play guy, that's going to put a limit on what he could get. But you know, if he scores 20 to 25 goals and has 200 hits, I mean, there's a ton of value in that.
So while we're on the topic, Tampa lost their entire third line. What do you think Tampa does?
Yeah, that's, I mean, my expectation was just kind of, okay, well, look, who is in the organization that is likely to kind of move up. And so I thought Ross Colton, who was kind of useful for them in a fourth line role, scored the cup winning goal. I think they might give him a chance to play up on the third line. I think Corey Perry.
Oh, right. I forgot about him. Yeah.
He might get a shot to play on the third line. Matthew Joseph.
Looks sharp.
Who, you know, I mean, he was a scratch at times in the playoffs, but he's been able to score a little bit and, you know, play a physical game, and you could easily start with that trio and say, okay, well, we're going to, you know, give them a shot as the third line. Alex Barré-Boulet scored like 3 goals in 15 games for them, but he scored, you know, point a game in the American Hockey League. It is exactly the kind of guy that Tampa Bay would bring in. And all of a sudden, you go, oh, wow, look at that. He scored 50 points because they've done it, you know, with Yanni Gourde. They did it with Tyler Johnson. They have a history of doing this with guys that, you know, we're overlooked, and usually they're overlooked because they're short. And you know, I think Barré-Boulet kind of fits the mold in that. So he would be sort of the wild card that I would think that it's possible he finds his way up there too. But you know, my initial guess when I'm projecting for the Lightning, it was Colton with Joseph and Perry. Those are big skates to fill because you know Coleman and Gourde and Goodrow, I mean, they were really good on two Stanley Cup runs. So, you know, to just lose all three of them and say, okay, well now we're going to plug three new guys in there, I think there are probably going to be some growing pains for the Lightning. Now, you know, the world's smallest violin is playing for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah.
And they're growing pains. Like you still have great forwards above them on the depth chart, and you've got a great defense and a great goalie. Like, you know, they'll survive. But I could very easily see some shuffling going on there during the season.
So do you see more minutes going to the top six? I know that third line with Gourde, Gaudreau and Coleman, like they chewed up, they were a checking line. They were seeing, you know, best competition.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you see those minutes being allocated to the top six, getting more minutes even?
Well, I could see some, like I could see having Kucherov back for the full season. I have to assume that they'll be willing to kind of turn Kucherov and Point loose on that top line and just, you know, let them eat. But also Anthony Cirelli, you know, they kind of didn't say much about it, but apparently he had some wrist injury last year because he had like one point in his last 22 games or something during the regular season. It was a ridiculous slump, right? Like, and he started the season fine, then all of a sudden went on this, you know, terrible slump, and then was okay in the playoffs. And so my expectation would be that, you know, if we can presume Anthony Cirelli's healthy and they're not trying to hide anything, that you know, on the second line, they should play quite a bit. You know, him and Stamkos and Killorn. I mean, those are all guys that they can trust. My inclination would be that the guys in the top six for Tampa Bay, you already knew they were really good bets, but I think even more so, if it's an extra minute a game or whatever for those guys, you know, that may not move the needle a whole lot based on what your expectations were, but it does kind of add, I guess, a floor to what your projections might be. Is that, you know, I don't think any of those guys are going to be lacking for ice time.
So Montreal is a pretty interesting case this year. They bring in Mike Hoffman, the emergence of Cole Caulfield, Shea Weber's not there. Do you think, like I do, that we finally get a top power play unit, a true top power play unit? Like Mike Hoffman, that's where he makes hay. I think it's what?
Basically all he does.
75% of his goals? Yeah. I mean, I got all my fingers and toes crossed that we get a true top power play here. And Jeff Petrie is probably going to, he'll make hay there as well. What's your pulse on Montreal this year?
You know, they've spent the last few years just feeding Shea Weber for one timers on the power play, whether it was effective or not. And more often than not, it wasn't, right? They do is feed him and he'd hammer away and not get the results you need. So now I expect basically those shots are going to go to Mike Hoffman. However they align the power play, I think the end game is still that you're going to want, the real shooter to get as many opportunities as he can. And that's, Hoffman, for whatever flaws are in his game, he can shoot the puck and at a very elite level. And so I expect that he's one side of the power play that you want. I think if you have Caulfield on the other side, that gives you a chance here. That, I mean, when we were just talking about Tampa Bay, Tampa Bay's got this ridiculous power play with Stamkos in one circle and Kucherov in the other. It's like, teams have so little hope of containing them, even if they don't get a ton of shots. And the Tampa Bay power play doesn't put up a huge volume of shots, but they score a ton because you've got Kucherov and Stamkos. Those are the guys shooting, right? And now, not that Caulfield and Hoffman are quite in that class, but if that's what Montreal, if they have some kind of setup like that, well, then, there's an opportunity there for, both of those guys to put up some points on the power play. And hopefully for the team's sake, that their power play is more productive than it's been in the past. Now, I like Petrie on their point. I mean, he had a really good year last year and kind of got overlooked, I think, for the most part. But I wonder whether Jonathan Drouin ends up finding a spot on their power play. Like if he does seem to be in a better spot right now than he was when he had to take his leave last year. When you've decided that, okay, well, we've got these shooters, having a guy like Drouin who's for all of the flaws in his game, he can, distribute the puck. And you have him and maybe Nick Suzuki and you have basically two passers and two shooters and see what happens there. If Montreal is doing this right, they'll have a different look to their power play. And really that's, when you've been doing it to mediocre or worse for a long time, you do something different, and hopefully the personnel will allow them to do that this year.
And the downside of this is they still have guys like Josh Anderson, Tyler Toffoli that might be on the outside looking in.
Yeah.
So maybe some of us are hoping for a 50-50 power play split, but I know just for my Petrie shares that I want that like 60-40, 70-30, something like that.
Toffoli, maybe he's the one who plays on the top unit instead of Drouin. But, Toffoli was probably the best skater last year. And so.
Particularly against Vancouver.
Yeah. Well, yes. And you don't want to, say, okay, well, now we're just bumping you off the top power play. But if, somebody like Josh Anderson, yes, it'd be fine if he gets some power play time, but he should not be driving the power play. His offensive production, at the best of times, is still not enough to, worry about him being on power play one. If he gets net front or something, for a specific reason, fine. Anderson, there's not enough there to make him a focal point of that power play.
So Rob Thomas just scored. You've been high on him in the past. I have.
I was before last season.
I like you. My patience is worn thin with Rob Thomas. I don't know how much longer I'm willing to wait for a breakout, but.
Well, if you looked at his first two seasons, he was kind of on a good trajectory.
But and now the right wing depth. Oh my God.
But that good trajectory kind of, you know, he fell off the curve last year, both with injuries, but even before he got hurt, he wasn't producing. And so, and you know, that I think makes Thomas, you know, a worthwhile sleeper type pick, this year, that, you know, if he bounces back and is the player that he was, you know, prior to last season, then, you know, there's a chance that he can be productive. But as you say, the depth on up front for St. Louis is not going to make it easy. It's not as though he's just going to slide into a scoring role and you're going to say, oh, okay, well, now he's set to produce. And it more looks like, well, it's going to be a battle. And sure, he can end up in the top nine, but, you know, who knows what kind of power play time there is. And so there's a whole lot of risk involved, I guess, with Rob Thomas. And you know, a year ago, I would have been, you know, banging the drum saying, get ready, Rob Thomas is on his way. And then, you know, you get brought back to earth pretty quickly.
This is the year he goes off too, because we're talking trash.
When you start slagging a guy, and that's, but you know, this is how expectations go. You know, when somebody has a season where they're you know, for whatever reason, and whether it's merely just percentages, you know, the shooting percentage is way down, or their on ice shooting percentage is way down. If that's the only reason, well, I think, you know, there's a better chance that you kind of bounce back. But if it's injury related, or you end up getting kind of passed on the depth chart, well, those are hurdles that are bigger to try and overcome, right? That when you look at that depth chart in St. Louis, once you've had Buchnevich, and I mean, we don't know what's happening with Tarasenko. Like, if Tarasenko isn't going to play, well, then I guess there's another spot available on the right side in St. Louis. But if Tarasenko, you know, decides he wants $7.5 million and he's going to show up, and if he does, well, then what do you do with Rob Thomas? I just don't know if there's enough opportunity, you know. And so that's why I would say, look, consider him as a late round sleeper type and keep your fingers crossed. But yeah, I don't get to be as optimistic on him now as I was a year ago.
So there's a couple goalies that are going pretty late that showed serious value to me, and maybe I'm a bit of a homer because Carter Hart's up there.
Well, tell me Carter Hart isn't on the same trajectory as Robert Thomas. Like,
oh, come on.
Like, Carter Hart had two good seasons. And going into last year, I mean, I was really high on Carter Hart. Like,
we all were, yeah.
I'm pretty sure I wrote a thing for The Athletic about awards and the betting odds. And I was like, well, Carter Hart for the Vezina. Let me tell you, not bad value. And then, I mean, you know, partway through the season, it just, the wheels fell off.
Oh, yeah.
I think his last 15 games, he had an .852 save percentage. Like, I mean, just incredibly bad.
And then now we get Ristolainen, Keith Yandel, and Martin Jones, and that's supposed to help, right?
You got Ryan Ellis, though.
Yeah.
There is at least one reason to be hopeful about that. But so that, I mean, not to, I mean, I was kind of joking about him being on the same path as Robert Thomas, because I think the expectation is that, look, Carter Hart's still relatively young. You should expect him to bounce back to previous goaltending form. You know, this is one of those things where the people who do technical work with goaltenders, I envy having that skill set, I guess, to be able to say, oh, he's doing this right or that right. I'm, you know, when it comes to, you know, evaluating for fantasy, I'm like, did he stop the puck or not? I don't have the technical wherewithal to break down goalies. In a lot of cases, I think you would be able to say, okay, he needs to fix this, this, and this, and then, you know, it should be okay. I mean, I know there was lots of complaining about the Flyers, you know, defensive play in front of Carter Hart, but I mean, I don't care what defense he had in front of him. You can't post an .852 save percentage in 15 games, like, at a time when your team was still sort of, you know, in playoff contention. Like, that was just, I mean, I haven't seen a starting goaltender go on that kind of cold streak in forever.
I have a theory that has been putting me to bed at night.
Yeah.
That I'm just going to keep telling myself over and over again. So if you remember 2 years back, he was stellar at home and he was really bad on the road. And then you go inside a COVID year and you pump in fake crowd noise. Does that sound more like a home game or does it sound more like a road game?
Yeah.
So maybe we can write it off That's what I'm going to hope for here, is that maybe he needs the fans. He needs the wind at his back in order to play well. And the crowd noise just wasn't cutting it.
It could be. I mean, like, you know, I never played to that level, but in games that I played, you know, in junior and university, I mean, big crowds, I loved playing those games a whole lot more. And so I guess if you're, you know, when you've been a high level hockey player and you've been playing in front of big crowds forever, even their crowds in junior can be pretty substantial, to all of a sudden have to go through COVID years where it's an empty arena or a very sparsely attended arena. It's different. This is where, you know, you would say, okay, but you're a professional making millions of dollars. Your game shouldn't just go off the rails because of that. But I mean, goalies are a tricky beast, and I can't pretend to get inside their heads and figure out, how you can be going great and then all of a sudden not. And conversely, like how Carey Price can be mediocre in the regular season, and then like I think in the last three playoffs he's been great. And like not just okay, like he's been great. And so, you know, to all the people who want to say, well, yeah, Carey Price is past it, he's you know, given you subpar regular seasons, I think, in three of the past four seasons. What do you do when all of a sudden he turns it on? You look like a fool because you're taking this larger sample of games and saying, look, he's not that good anymore. But then all of a sudden, you know, he performs at this really high level. So, you know, if Carter Hart can show up this year and flip the switch and be back to the previous Carter Hart, well, then, yeah, there's tons of value to be had.
Yeah, ADP of 135, 10th round in 12-team leagues.
Like, I think you'll be able to get him as your backup goalie, right? Like, as your second goalie, I think, in most cases, in which a year ago was not in the consideration at all.
Yeah, he was in, like, top five. That was brutal. He let me down too, man. Tristan Jarry, kind of the same deal. There's a lot to be said about the Penguins. They're still pretty relevant. You know, Crosby might miss a couple weeks, and Malkin could miss a couple days, could miss a couple years. We don't really know what's going on there.
He always misses time.
Yeah. Hopefully he gets it out of the way in the beginning of the year this time, and we can get him in the eighth round and just stash on IR.
Yeah.
But how do you feel about Tristan Jarry at like ninth, 10th round?
Yeah. Like one of the interesting things is like, Jarry's season last year was fine, except his playoffs stunk. And I mean, that's a six-game sample. And so that's kind of precisely the place you go when you're looking for value, is that, okay, so he didn't perform in the playoffs, and everyone saw it. And so that, you know, kind of sticks in people's minds. But, you know, overall, he's still going to be a starting goaltender on a team that should have a winning record. I mean, there's a path here to the Penguins season really going off the rails if Crosby and Malkin, you know, end up missing more time than you expect, or maybe there's another injury after they come back or what have you. You know, things could really go haywire there, but let's, you know, presume that Crosby comes back and, you know, they have enough talent otherwise that, you know, they should be a playoff team, but at least a contending team. And if you're a starting goaltender on a team of that caliber, well, then you should have a chance to put up some fantasy numbers, which is why, yeah, Tristan Jarry probably is going to, you know, give decent value. And you know, this is one of the things when you're looking to find value is you're trying to kind of go against perception, right? And the perception on Jarry as well, he's cooked because he had, you know, one bad playoff series. I mean, goodness, it's not like Pittsburgh is inexperienced with goaltenders who have had bad playoff series. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury is a legend in the city, and he cost them, you know, multiple years of Crosby's prime when he struggled in the playoffs. So I'm not necessarily saying that Tristan Jarry is going to, you know, go on and win the Vezina Trophy at 37 or anything the way Fleury did, but there's certainly reason to believe that he can still be a good starting goaltender. He was considered a good starting goaltender until he had a bad playoff series. And so I wouldn't give up on him just that easily.
Do you think Jeff Carter is the 1C until Crosby comes back?
With no Malkin there too, yeah. You know, you might be looking at like Jeff Carter and Teddy Bluger 1-2 down the middle or something like that, which, you know, that's not great. But, you know, if you're the Penguins and you can kind of see a light at the end of the tunnel, like, oh, Crosby's going to be back in, you know, 2 or 3 weeks to start the year, then you kind of deal with the situation as it is. It's not like you can just trade for somebody who's going to fill Sidney Crosby's shoes for a couple of weeks. So yeah, it might be Jeff Carter as the number one center to start. And look, if he gets that opportunity, Carter obviously, the percentages bounced back for him in a big way in Pittsburgh last year, after like 3 years of subpar shooting percentages in Los Angeles. At the very least, like, he can still skate. He's 36 years old, but he can move. Maybe a week or two before the trade deadline, I was watching a late night game when he's with the Kings, and somebody for San Jose took off on a breakaway, and Carter, who was two or three strides behind him when this guy took off, Carter caught him. And I'm like, 36 years old, and he's catching a guy, on a straightaway skate. That's impressive. And so, if he can still move like that, I don't want him to be my number one center, for any extended period, but at the very least he can kind of plug the hole for a little while.
And serviceable sounds about right.
As long as it's not going to be too long.
How are you feeling about Patrick Laine this year? We were just talking about, I'm not giving up on Jari. Are we giving up on Laine?
Well, I wouldn't give up on him. Because this is exactly where you can find value, is you find exactly, a guy who's coming off a disaster of a season. But one of the reasons that I think his season was a disaster is Columbus isn't really equipped for a player like Patrick Laine. They don't have what you really need. What team couldn't use this guy? But somebody like Matthew Barzal, who does a lot of the puck carrying and can distribute. And Columbus just doesn't have a center like that who, can grab the puck and get it all through the, zone exit, through the neutral ice, into the offensive zone. And then you find Patrick Laine who unleashes howitzers from the top of the circle and scores. They need, better playmakers to surround him now. Laine, for his own part, has to do better. But that, even when he was in Winnipeg, there were times where like his shot volume would kind of shrink. And it'd be like, okay, if you're Winnipeg, your goal every game should be, okay, we need at least 3 shots on goal from Patrick Laine. And maybe that means he gets 5 shot attempts or something to get there. But that should be one of your focuses. For Columbus, it might even be more so because they just don't have a ton of high-end talent there. Now, the one thing that I guess I noticed in the offseason is when they made that trade with your Flyers, with Atkinson for Voracek, is that Voracek is very much the distributor. Mm-hmm. And, I don't necessarily think he, transports the puck from defensive zone through the offensive zone, in the way that a Barzal or somebody does. But he is a guy who can control the puck and feed a shooter. And maybe that's part of the plan in Columbus is, Laine ended up playing with Atkinson for quite a while last year, but Atkinson's not really a puck distributor. He's a good skater and he can shoot and score. Having him and Laine play together means that you don't have somebody who's feeding Patrick Laine. And in some respects, this reveals the kind of glaring shortcoming of Patrick Laine is he needs someone to get him the puck, right? Like a lot of times, if you're a guy who's drafted as high as Laine, you kind of expect that guy should be able to grab the puck himself and carry it and do these things himself, but he can't. We've seen enough of him in the National Hockey League that maybe in short bursts he has, but for the most part, he's a guy who needs, he doesn't need a ton of room and he can do it from far out, but he needs somebody to pass him the puck so he can shoot. That's the risk that still exists is that you go to Columbus's roster and they don't have a lot of guys that you think of as great puck distributors to get it to Laine. Now, having said all that, yes, I'd probably take a shot at Laine at some point in the middle rounds of my draft because there's upside there. And I would think coming out of last season, he should at least be humbled. He came into the league as a pretty cocky guy and that's fine.
Just a bit, yeah.
He was second overall pick and he scored a lot of goals and that's okay. But, when you have a season like he had last year where, he wasn't scoring goals, his underlying numbers were awful. He wasn't even getting shots on goal. Like it was bad. That's why you have a chance to get some value with Laine this year, because if he was good, then, he'd get drafted highly and that would be that. But now there's risk maybe what we saw from him last year, that doesn't automatically bounce back. If you want to take a shot at it and play for the upside.
No more Tortorella.
Well, and there's, you know, I don't know how much you want to blame John Tortorella for Laine's performance, but we'll find out, right?
As much as I can.
Well, yeah, but maybe it's a case of, I mean, talk about getting inside a goaltender's head. You know, I can't get inside an elite sniper's head any easier, right? Like, if Patrick Laine needs to feel loved and supported to go out and fire pucks, then maybe that happens for him with a new coach. So.
So now I want to open up the floor to you. I want to maybe, I don't know how much I'm, exposing you or taking away from what might be a really great article, but any of your sleepers that you feel comfortable releasing on this show?
Oh, sure. You know, I always have more in addition to what I'll talk about.
So I believe it.
So I think Tomáš Tatar in New Jersey is going to be worthwhile. And this goes to our premise of, you know, the perception of Tomáš Tatar is that he's washed. You know, the Montreal Canadiens went on this great run to the Stanley Cup final after they scratched Tomáš Tatar and left him as a healthy scratch throughout the playoffs. But, you know, over the past three seasons, he was Montreal's leading scorer. And he goes to a New Jersey team that does not have proven talent on the wings. And there are opportunities there for any of the guys in New Jersey on the wings. Like Yegor Sharangovich finished well for them last year. Jesper Bratt, I think, is another really interesting sleeper there. But Tatar, you know, he's more accomplished than any of those guys. And so if the opportunity is there, he might put up some decent numbers for New Jersey. I'm cautiously optimistic about Brandon Saad. Oof. He's not going to play power play. And so that, you know, puts a ceiling on what he could be. But there's a chance that Saad goes and plays, say, on Ryan O'Reilly's wing. And they just control play, you know, at a really good level. And, you know, and Saad might score 20 to 25 goals. Like, I think, you know, going into this offseason, I was sort of on a coin flip of whether Saad or Zach Hyman would be the better addition as a free agent, as a left winger. Like, Saad, you know, he doesn't put up the same kind of numbers because he's not getting power play time. But just as a 5-on-5 player, I think there's not that much to choose between them. But you look at the cost, and you know, Brandon Saad was a lot cheaper. I'm still going to bang the drum for Rasmus Dahlin.
It's risky.
I know, but he was, I mean, part of this is that, you know, first overall picks, I'm slow to give up on them. If he had a great rookie season, and basically in the next two seasons, it's kind of gone steadily down, but he did start to perform a little bit better once Don Granato took over last season. And that, you know, just in terms of not only point production, but like he was generating more shots, his Corsi was better. He wasn't getting caved in. And it appeared, and this is, I guess, the reason why I like him, is that Granato appears to recognize, you know, if you're going to have Rasmus Dahlin, you have to go kind of for the full version of Rasmus Dahlin, which is you let him carry the puck, you let him, you know, create offensively. And you have to live with, you know, whatever shortcomings happen defensively. You know, like that seemed like a thing that Ralph Kruger just, it stuck with him that, you know, every mistake Dahlin made defensively was something that, oh, okay, well, you have to sit him down and correct this. And it's like, well, sometimes when you have a thoroughbred like Dahlin, you just kind of have to let them go. And I think particularly when you're a team in the state of the Buffalo Sabres, wins and losses aren't really going to matter for them this year. So I think it would mean a lot for them to fix Rasmus Dahlin.
It reminds me a lot of what you were saying about Ottawa too, is they're not playing meaningful games. So just let your horses run, right?
Yeah. And I think some of the teams that have, I mean, New Jersey, we were just talking about these young wingers in New Jersey, right? Like Yegor Sharangovich was playing first line minutes for them like early last year. And I'm looking at his pedigree and I'm like, I don't know why Yegor Sharangovich is getting these minutes.
Heard of the guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he had like 10 points in 27 games, you know, while playing kind of significant minutes. And so it's not going all that great. And then he finished the year with 20 points in 27 games, including 10 goals. And all of a sudden it's like, well, now, you know, like he's going to come into this year with some expectations. Now I still think you can probably get some value on him. I don't think he's, you know, widely known as a great goal scorer or anything like that, but the Devils weren't playing meaningful games. And so they were willing to kind of roll these young wingers out and let them try. And, you know, some of them you know, didn't last very long, or, you know, they get hurt and you go, okay, well, cycle in somebody else. But a guy like Sharon Govich made it work. I think that's exactly the kind of thing that if your team is not going to be, you know, in contention, it makes a ton of sense to take your young guys and give them reps, because your hope has to be, you know, that they actually develop as NHLers so that, you know, a year or two down the road, you actually can compete. Heck, you can go back to the LA Kings with Drew Doughty when he came in as second overall pick, and they plugged him right into their lineup, and they're playing him 21 minutes a night or something as a, you know, an 18-year-old. And I mean, there were nights that he got caved in, but it was like, that's fine. You know, we had the second worst record in the league last year. We're not going to make the playoffs this year, but we're going to develop this guy into a legit top defenseman. And, you know, he was for a long time. So I think there's, you know, lots of value to the teams who aren't contenders that you can, you can find some value for fantasy by, you know, finding the guy that team is just going to, you know, really try to work with and improve and give them ice time. Darlene's one. Now I have a couple of like deep sleepers that,
I just want to take a moment to give credit where credit is due. You're an absolute machine. You are just spitting off what I can only imagine off the top of your head. Igor Sharangovich's first half, Igor Sharangovich's second half. Like you got a 32 gigabyte brain going on back there.
I recently did the New Jersey Devils on my Locked On podcast. So that's where the Sharangovich research came from. But all right, I've got two like really deep sleepers. If you're in a standard league, these guys are probably not under consideration for you. But if you're in a deep league, okay, Nashville's Tanner Janot was undrafted, seemed like just a run-of-the-mill American Hockey League player. Last year, puts up 21 points in 13 games and gets called up to the Preds. Has 7 points in 15 games for Nashville, including 5 goals. He also had 53 hits.
He bangs.
And so if Tanner Janot, I'm saying if Tanner Janot is on the roster or makes the team, I mean, there's still, there's no guarantee that he's in the lineup. But if he is, worth a look, because I think Nashville should be looking to kind of shake things up among their forwards quite a bit, in fact. And so a guy like
bring Tomasino in,
there's another one. I mean, I'm expecting more people to be aware of Tomasino given, you know, how well he produced in the American Hockey League and that he was a first round pick. But yes, if you bring in guys like Janot and Tomasino, and give Eli Tolvanen, you know, a regular role, and you kind of, you can remake, what Nashville's forward group, is looking like. And then anyway, in the case of Janot, for fantasy purposes, if he ends up playing any kind of ice time, and contributes a little bit offensively and also gives you like 4 hits a game, well, you know, there's,
sign me up.
There's value to that. And then my other one is, and I can't even believe this, Dmitry Yashkin, you know, played for the Blues for a number of years and hardly scored ever. But he went to the KHL, and over the past 2 years in the KHL, he scored 69 goals in like 118 games or something. Like he's a legitimate KHL sniper. And you know, the NHL equivalency for the KHL actually translates pretty well, you know, compared relative to other leagues. And so I'm not going to project Dmitry Yashkin to come to the NHL and be a sniper, but I think, you know, playing in Arizona where it's, you know, teams have picked over the carcass of that franchise pretty well. And so there's opportunity there that, you know, if Yashkin comes back to the NHL and can score a little bit, that he might get lots of ice time for Arizona. And so, as I say, he's known to hit too, right? Yeah. And part of the reason that you might think that he could, you know, sustain and have decent ice time is he's also a decent defensive player. You know, that was kind of his calling card in the first place. And so, you know, as I say, these are really deep league, you know, last round kind of picks, but there's upside if you're interested in either one of them.
Well, Scott, that's all I got. It's it's always a pleasure hanging out with you, man. And thank you so much for coming on. Let the people know where they can find you. I think it's by Scott Cullen on Twitter.
Yes.
You got the Substack, Locked On Fantasy Baseball. Hockey's all I do. Is baseball still happening?
It is still on, but the season's winding down. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we've got the Locked On Fantasy Baseball, Locked On Fantasy Hockey, Scott Cullen, hockey.substack.com. You'll see stuff from me on McKean's Hockey and The Athletic heading into this week is where things are really starting to pick up. But as I said off the top or early on, my rankings should be coming up. And so that those will get listed, I guess, on my Substack page, but it's probably just going to end up being on a Google sheet that you can do whatever you want with it once I put it out there.
Well, right on, Scott. Thank you so much for...
Thanks for having me, Tim. This was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Love having you. Take care, brother.
Yep. See you, man.
All right, guys. That was the interview with Scott Cullen. We were talking sleepers. Man, lot to go over. A lot to get to. But I hope you guys learned something. I hope you enjoyed this one. It's always a pleasure having Scott on the show and getting a read of where the value is when we're coming to drafts and how his projections stack up. And, you know, one of the forefront minds in the business when it comes to fantasy hockey. It's a name you got to trust, and it's an opinion that I trust. So I hope you guys liked it. It was a lot of fun talking, so I was happy to put this episode out. Yeah, we'll catch you guys later. Let us know what you think on Twitter at FHF Hockey. Give Scott a shout at By Scott Cullen on Twitter. And you can join us in the Fantasy Hockey Discord too. We got one going. I think you can find the link still on our Twitter. I forget what we have pinned right now, but hey, man, you'll find it. So hope to see you there. We'll see you next time. We love yous.